A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging arts organizations. Today, we'll hear about an exhibit honoring the life and legacy of Leonard Bernstein, whose 100th birthday anniversary is being celebrated this year. Created by the Grammy Museum, the exhibit is currently on display at the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts. My guests will be Grammy Museum Executive Director Bob Santelli and Jonathan Higham, the library's curator of music and recorded sound. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. Robert Spano will leave his position as music director of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra in 2021, wrapping up two decades at the head of that orchestra. In his statement released by the orchestra, Spano said that over the years, he and the orchestra have achieved many shared goals and dreams. Following his departure, he will conduct the orchestra on a regular basis as conductor laureate. Spano is also music director of the Aspen Festival. The 2018 Academy Award nominations are out, and John Williams racked up his 51st Oscar nomination with his score for the latest installment in the Star Wars epic, The Last Jedi. Other past nominees on this year's list are Hans Zimmer for Dunkirk, his 11th Oscar nomination, 9-time nominee Alexander Desplat for The Shape of Water, and Carter Burwell for his score for Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, his 2nd nomination. They were joined by first-time nominee Johnny Greenwood, who received the nod for his score for The Phantom Thread. The 90th Academy Awards will be broadcast Sunday, March 4th. Speaking of awards, Bronx teacher Melissa Salguero has been named as the recipient of the 2018 Music Educator Award by the Grammy Museum and the Recording Academy. Salguero has taught music at PS 48 Elementary School since 2010, and in 2013 was named Lincoln Center Arts Teacher of the Year. She credited her parents for encouraging her music education by buying her a piano and then a guitar. Salguero, who will receive a $10,000 honorarium and a matching gift for her school, was honored in conjunction with Grammy Award Week events. The New Jersey Symphony Orchestra has reached a 5-year contract with its musicians. The agreement, which is retroactive to this past September, keeps the players' base pay unchanged in the first 2 years, followed by increases of 2%, 3%, and 5% in subsequent years. President and CEO Gabriel Van Aals said the contract will enable the orchestra to look ahead to plans to celebrate its 100th anniversary in 2022. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. Lenny. How many figures in the world of classical music can be introduced and recognized simply by their first name, and a nickname at that? Certainly among American classical music icons, Leonard Bernstein stands at the pinnacle, perhaps because of the breadth of his reach and influence. He was an incredible conductor, with a New York Philharmonic debut that grabbed headlines to boot. His musical compositions ranged from symphonies to popular Broadway songs, planting his reputation firmly in both traditional classical music and the popular musical culture of his time. And his commitment to education nurtured a love and appreciation for music in countless young people and shaped a younger generation of conductors. This year marks the centennial of his birth. He was born August 25, 1918, and there will be many tributes to remember the man and his legacy throughout the year, many of which I hope to cover. This week, we'll start with how the Recording Academy is remembering the man who was nominated 63 times and won 16 Grammys in categories ranging from Best Orchestral Performance and Best Contemporary Composition to Best Album for Children, and of course, a Lifetime Achievement Award. The Grammy Awards this weekend will feature a salute to Bernstein as part of its televised program, And the Grammy Museum has created an exhibit that first opened in September at the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts in Washington, D.C., and is currently on display at the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts, located at Lincoln Center. The exhibit includes items that reflect and illustrate his broad-reaching career and legacy. His conducting baton, sheet music, LP covers, and a recording and press coverage of his historic New York Philharmonic debut, as well as videos from his Young People's Concerts, personal letters, and programs from the concerts and benefits he held to support the social causes of peace and justice that he championed. If you watch one video closely, you can see him introduce a 7-year-old Yo-Yo Ma at the American Pageant of the Arts in 1962. You'll even see a permanent wave hair curling machine that his father sold as part of his hair products business, a science fiction-like wire extruding contraption. Bob Santelli is executive director of the Los Angeles-based Grammy Museum, which last fall opened its latest satellite in Newark, New Jersey, and he curated the Bernstein exhibit. The Grammy Museum has featured centennial tributes to Frank Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald, and Woody Guthrie, and when it considered classical musicians, Santelli said Bernstein was the perfect choice for the museum.
He's a great, very, very important figure, not just in American classical music, but world classical music. And to be given the opportunity to tell his story for the long-time fans, of which are very many, as well as young fans, young people, for instance, who may not even know the name, but might know some of the work, like West Side Story, to interpret his life, interpret his music, and its significance is something that we've been honored to do, and hopefully the exhibit is meeting those expectations.
What did you want to convey through the exhibit as you planned and put it together?
There's been many books, many biographies, much written, said, documented about Leonard Bernstein. We read it all, looked at it all, talked to a lot of people. And when it came down to deciding what would be the guiding, if you will, mantra of this exhibit, we wanted to let people know that Leonard Bernstein was one of the most complex creative individuals that we have ever run across. And there's a lot of them, from Duke Ellington and Louis Armstrong to Bob Dylan and Bruce Springsteen. Nobody can match the complexity and depth of Leonard Bernstein, a super genius, someone who was not just a composer, not just a conductor, not just a band leader, not just a pianist, not just a philanthropist or an activist, a husband, a father, a trendsetter. He was all of these and then more. And the fact that he could pack into a 24-hour day all the things he did still boggles my mind. But in the end, it's the music, of course, that stands out and that he's best known for. So you'll hear that. You'll see that. You'll be able to contextualize that a little bit more and maybe learn something about his great musical legacy that you didn't know. But you'll also kind of understand the man behind the music. And like I said, that's so complex that that too will bring better clarity to how and why this man made such incredible music.
And what would you say are some of the highlights of the exhibit?
Well, you know, we had terrific help from the Bernstein family, from Indiana University, from the Library of Congress. So this is by far and away the most comprehensive exhibit, I think, ever on a classical music figure in the U.S. And it is, of course, sprinkled with interesting interactive displays, home movies, Grammy performances, the ability to go in and participate in a sing-along with a song from West Side Story. I think my favorite aspect of the exhibit really is something exceedingly simple. And I've been asked this question before, but it's the very first artifact you see. It's his baton. It's his conductor's baton. And then even though we have great stuff, people say, really? And I say, yeah. And the reason why I do is because that symbolizes for me everything that I admired and knew about Leonard Bernstein before I did this project and everything I learned and appreciated after. So it's the symbolic artifact for me, and I get to see it every time I walk into the exhibit.
Well, looking at Bernstein, and specifically in the context of the Grammys, What does he represent, and what does he, as a both a classical musician and also really a very early crossover artist, if you look at it that way, what does he represent in the world of the Recording Academy and that era of the industry?
Bernstein represents the apex of American classical music. There's no one artist, composer, conductor, who better represents or has achieved as much as Leonard Bernstein. So when it comes to bringing a classical music figure onto the Grammy stage, which we will do on Sunday night, in song and remembrance, of course, is Leonard Bernstein. I mean, he has to be the first one. When the Grammy Museum said, you know, we are responsible for all kinds of music, including classical music, and as soon as we said that, the first name that comes to our mind saying, well, who did we start with in an exhibit? Who should we first consider? It was Leonard Bernstein. The fact that the centennial occurred at the same time was pretty good, but even if the centennial hadn't occurred this year, we would certainly do Leonard Bernstein first and foremost. There's no one else. Aaron Copland, of course, and Charles Ives and Yo-Yo Ma and so many others have contributed to the great American classical tradition, and that's not to belittle anyone before or after him. But I think most of them will say Lenny. Lenny's the one, the most important one of them all.
Well, I think we had a chance briefly to speak about this when the experience opened in Newark, and I think it was either you or Neil who tipped me off to the Bernstein exhibit. And that's about the relationship between the classical music world and the Grammys. And looking at the historical scope, which would be the purview of the museum, at this point, what type of relationship dynamic do you see now between the Recording Academy and the classical world? And how do you see that kind of moving forward into this very uncertain future that, particularly in the classical music world, there's a lot of hand-wringing over?
Part of what the Grammy Museum's mission is to make certain that we represent to the best of our abilities all kinds of music. That, you know, the American music spectrum or landscape is exceedingly broad, and we have our work cut out for us to make sure that we don't forget or diminish any particular music form. But when you look at, you know, that task, you know, I come from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so I don't come from the classical music world. And at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, job was so much easier. It was about the history of rock and roll and the people who populate that. I probably have 40 or 50 different music forms and subgenres of those music forms to worry about. So when we think about classical music or even an indigenous music form like blues or Cajun music or zydeco, a lot of these music forms are not, in terms of popularity, what they used to be. And our biggest challenge, whether you're talking about classical music or blues, or even rock and roll to a certain degree, is to how do you maintain interest and movement in the form with millennials? How does that happen? Obviously, classical music and opera have their challenges. There's no question about it. But those challenges are equally formidable in the world of blues or in the world of bluegrass music and other roots music forms that young people today either don't have the ability to sit down and really dive into, or don't have the interest. So the Grammy Museums, and I say museums because, of course, we're in Newark, New Jersey now, we're in L.A., we're in Mississippi, and we'll be in other places in the next few years. Our role is to have that music live, not just on the award show, but the other 364 days of the year. And that's the task, that's the mission, and it's an important one. And, you know, myself and my staff, we take it very seriously.
What do you think Leonard Bernstein would make of the music world today? What do you think he'd be up to?
I think if Leonard Bernstein was still alive, you'd hear hip-hop and somehow in his music. I think he would have gone crazy for Hamilton. I think he would be perhaps collaborating with someone like a Kendrick Lamar or a Jay-Z, understanding and knowing that this music form is important. And despite the fact that it's had a rough go with critics, particularly high-end critics of the classical music world, that there is value there and that it's a great opportunity for exploration. I also think, despite his age, whatever it might be, he would take young people's concerts more seriously than ever, knowing full well that to reach out to millennials and to make them aware of and introduce them to this incredible classical music tradition that we have in this country and the rest of the world is imperative. And he'd probably put it on his shoulders, and he'd probably single-handedly do his best to make certain that at least kids, young people, were introduced to the form or to the forms. And hopefully from that would come a new generation of not just audience members, but great musicians, composers, and conductors. You know, whenever I give a talk, I come out and divulge this immediately that, you know, I'm not a classical music scholar. I'm not a Leonard Bernstein scholar. I took on this role as an exciting new venture for me to learn more about it. And I spent almost 4 years researching, talking, watching documentaries, dealing with family members to get to the point where I felt I was able to tell this story. I liken that to young people coming in who feel like, well, I don't really know much about them, or I don't really know much about classical music. And I hope that they go on in a more condensed time frame, of course, the same kind of journey that I did, and walk away with the same kind of results, which is, you know, now I'm hard pressed not to play Bernstein at least a few times a week, not because I have to, but because I want to.
That was Bob Santelli, founding executive director of the Grammy Museum. I toured the exhibit with Jonathan Higham, curator of music and recorded sound at the library, which contributed items from its own collection.
He was so involved with everything. There's a de facto archive of things of his that are just here everywhere, in theater division, dance division. Of course, Jerome Robbins, his materials are here, and so all of their collaborations are represented there. So it's a natural home to have it here in New York and kind of launch the New York Bernstein stuff. So that's the other thing. I mean, there are things, as you know, all over the joint. So it's nice to be able to direct people here. It's nice that this is kind of in the center of activity that would have been close to Bernstein. So We've put in some materials from, let's say, Margaret Carson was his manager his publicist for a while, and her collection had a variety of materials in it, including some scores for songs and things. So some of those are in there. I don't believe there are any recordings in there, although we do have lots of recordings. There's a really, really nice one we just came across, too late to get in the exhibition, but of Bernstein performing at Mark Blitzstein's memorial service. It's really beautiful. We have the first recording that he is on, in which he plays piano for some David Diamond piece. So there's lots of gems like that. In terms of what ended up in there, I think there's actually some of the West Side Story materials are from theater and dance. So I'd have to go back and look, actually, because the music division, I think some of the things we put forth were already sort of represented, so there aren't as many materials there.
So as you watched this come together and be installed here, what were some of the things that struck you about the exhibit?
I think, and this sounds a little, out there, but one of the things, as I saw it going up, that I don't think was a purposeful highlight. I think it just really demonstrated what we all know, which is every time I saw something go up, it had a kind of joyous, like the energy that you could see from the photos or the musical selections or even in his writing. There was just a kind of optimism and an energy and a unbridledness about him that came through even in setting it up. Because even the graphics, you'd see one go up and it's him like this, or, you know, just a lot of extraordinary expressions. And that was the first thing I noticed, was how, for lack of a term, sort of joyful the exhibit is. And it seems consistent with the way he presented himself to the world. Just, you know, he was all in and wanted to do the right thing and was kind to people, and that comes across, I think. That was the thing that stood out to me. It connected all of the things in a way that an exhibit will try to connect things through the narrative and the design, but really this kind of just pleasure in music and joy of what the arts can accomplish when it comes through to me, and that to me has turned out to really continues to grow on me. So that I'm glad about. It's nice to really see one of our revered musicians and be able to understand viscerally at least some part of what was so important about this person, whether or not you know about music or care about music. He's someone you'd probably listen to no matter what, and because you wanted to feel like he was feeling. That's how, I don't know, that comes across to me. I really like that. So.
And what have you seen in terms of the attraction or people who are coming in here? Are people coming out to see the exhibit, and how are they reacting?
Well, one is, you know, Bernstein's not so old that many people would have known who he was just because he was still alive in the 90s. And I think what you'll see are people come in who are maybe more professional musicians, and you can see them gravitate toward the scores or the conducting, and they'll have these conversations about performances they were in, or maybe the time they played under his conducting. I've seen a bunch of that, people just kind of reminiscing with one another as they go through. What's also been interesting to me are to see the people who would work more on the admin or business side, like former lawyers or former business people who are involved with him that I just happened to have met when I was in there, and they would tell these great stories about. Everybody's got a story. Anyone who was, even if they didn't know him, my experience is most people who knew who he was and they came in have some story about, oh, I went to the young people's concerts. That's been really interesting, how many people went to those and have really just pronounced memories, positive memories of those concerts. Every section there, you'll see somebody have a reaction that they can relate to. West Side Story, you know, everybody, even if you don't know, you know it, knows it. And you can see the bells coming together and chiming at the same time with different people in the gallery. So that's what's been interesting to me. People are genuinely like to tell stories. They like to tell stories more than ask questions in there, because many people have some experience. I mean, I've got my own stories, you know, and I was a little kid, so that's been interesting. I've enjoyed seeing how many staff here, you know, a number of them went to the young people's concerts or worked with him in some capacity, and that being the case, going through the exhibit or being near it when people who knew Bernstein or worked with him were coming out, they're not going in asking questions and challenging the way in which this is presented. They're coming out with just remembering stories or having their minds jarred a bit about a particular event. It's like a giant class reunion down there, but nobody went to school together. I don't know how to put it. So he kind of brings everybody together. I've been taken by the love people had for him, and the trust and the sort of hope he represented for people. People talk about it. And also, just like we were talking as we went through, to see how entwined Bernstein became as a cultural figure in America, certainly around the world. There was one video we didn't really stop to see at the Grammys where he introduces Tina Turner. Okay. And it's fascinating because he goes out of his way to talk about music. You know, he talks about, well, Schubert was a great composer, but he had some great songs and he had some not so great songs. And he said, just like the Beatles had these great songs and they had some that weren't so great. And guess what? Tina Turner had some great songs and also had some not great ones, but, and then he, you know, it's just his ability to level the playing field for all kinds of music. I think, we won't say we take for granted, but it sounds like a cliched thing, but I really think that was important to our culture to have somebody who otherwise was representing a traditional institution, a cultural institution writ large, as someone who embraced all of the musical forms that made the time he was alive special, that he listened to and what we're used to now. So that comes out, and you see, I've seen lots of kids in there. They're all scared of that hair machine, as I am. But the you know, the kids, I mean, he was one of the great children's educators too, which I don't think we forget at all, but just one other thing he was really not just good at, but changed the way we we think about children with music, and you know, he didn't treat them like idiots. He just showed them what he knew and explained it in a way they could understand.
That was Jonathan Higham, curator of music and recorded sound at the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts. Other partners in the exhibit included the Bernstein Family, Brandeis University, the Leonard Bernstein Office, and the Indiana University Jacobs School of Music. As I got ready to leave the exhibit, I spoke with two young visitors, James Rushen and Molly Downs. They both work in musical theater, Rushen as a director and Downs as a performer. Soon after they walked in, they were looking over some of the Bernstein scores on display.
I like looking at composers' handwriting a lot.
We were joking about handing anybody this sheet music and asking it to actually be played. still pretty legendary to see his handwriting in front of us. Not much you can do with it. it's pretty cool.
What does you're both in theater, so obviously Bernstein resonates to some extent, but what do you see as his legacy, as what he means to people who are, you know, in the industry, you know, in performance today?
He was one of the first people after like Iolanthe and Pirates of Penzance happened, and Gilbert and Sullivan really like made the last like big jump in the art form. Bernstein was one of the first people who really was like, listen, I know we had this beautiful whole like romantic era of music, and now we're like heading into a bunch of neoclassical guys. Why can't we write that kind of complexity in musical theater as well, and write really smartly and not just boom chick the stuff forever? You know what I mean? Like he's incredible. Like he's the reason why we study him still today is because very few people write as well as he does, ever.
Right, and I mean, from a performer's angle, there's getting to work on any of this repertory is kind of dream come true. It's like reach repertory. You know what I mean? You're never, if you get asked to do this, you know you've made it.
Right. Or at least the people believe in your abilities like far and beyond what you would have guessed.
Right. Especially being a dancer and getting to look at America over there, like you have that rhythm in your head ingrained since you're a little kid. It's something that I think we miss in a lot of contemporary musical theater and writing today. At least I miss it. I miss it, an actual highly composed score, as opposed to just getting a couple, you know, chord charts are great, but to see this in front of you makes a difference as a performer. Gives you a little bit of extra inspiration.
That was James Rushen and Molly Downs, who recently visited the Grammy Museum's Leonard Bernstein at 100 exhibit at the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts at Lincoln Center. The exhibit will be open in New York through March 24th, and then moves to the Skirball Cultural Center in Los Angeles from April through September. More information on the exhibit is available at grammymuseum.org/exhibits, and the library's website can be found at nypl.org/locations/LPA. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you, focusing on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world each week on La Tempo. But remember, programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.